Okay, the next case on calendar this morning is Marks versus District Court, Real Party and Interest Switch, case number 77437. Are counsel ready to proceed? Please approach and advise the clerk, if you will, how much time you wish to reserve for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Jeff Stein, and I represent the plaintiffs and petitioners in this action, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, we filed this case a year and a half ago, and in all that time, we still haven't received a responsive pleading from defendants. And recall that we filed first. This federal case that's pending in the District of Nevada didn't arise until 2 months after we filed our case. And at that time, rather than stay that second filed case, which, by the way, caught wind of our allegations, copied them almost verbatim, and refiled them in federal court, the district court chose to move to stay our case because they wanted to choose the forum that they would proceed in. The lower court should have rejected that stay, but it didn't. And it didn't base its decision on the unique circumstances or the case-specific factors in this case, but the lower court based it on the fact that the PSLRA financial stake requirement, which applies only in federal court, was not met in the state court action. Your Honors, that decision was erroneous. And it was reversible in 5 different respects. The first respect, Your Honors, was that it undermined the Supreme Court of the United States decision in Cyan versus Beaver County, which says that plaintiffs can file their cases in state court and that they can't be removed. Second, Your Honors, it took plaintiffs' right to choose a forum and handed it to defendants. Third, Your Honors, it discounted the extreme prejudice that we have suffered in this case by an indefinite stay. Fourth, it disregarded precedent that always favors first filed cases over second filed cases. And fifth, even under defendant standard, which is to conduct a fact-intensive case-by-case analysis, the court did not do that. Instead, it based its decision on an objective standard that always favors federal court. So I'd like to go through those 5 reasons today, one by one. First, Your Honors, the trial court's decision undermined the ruling in Cyan versus Beaver County.
You probably should also address the standard for review on writ relief.
Sure. The standard of review in petition for writ of mandamus, Your Honors, is a manifest abuse of discretion. But as this court ruled in the A.A. Primo case, although there's deference given to a court's discretion in the lower court, there is no deference given for legal error. So what we're talking about today are 5 different instances of legal error.
You're urging a de novo review on a mandamus writ?
Right, Your Honors. And that is within the court's discretion to review it de novo. Your Honors, Cyan was filed in early last year, and what it held was it upheld the long-standing jurisdiction of state courts to hear these 1933 Act cases. That dates back all the way to the enactment of the 1933 Act in 1933. In addition to that, Your Honors, the court held that those cases can't be removed to federal court even if defendants want to remove them. Well, what the trial court did in this case was it shut down our case and then allow the defendants to proceed in federal court, albeit with a different plaintiff, Your Honors, but as a practical matter, there is no difference between what the Supreme Court of the United States said can't happen, which is you can't remove to federal court, and what the trial court allowed defendants to do here, which is stay our case indefinitely and allow defendants to defend the claim in federal court.
Well, I mean, I suppose the difference is, in this case, some other plaintiffs actually filed their case in federal court, and a lead plaintiff and lead attorney were selected. So did that put the federal court case in some sense ahead of the state court case?
Justice Kavish, no. Because, as I said, this is a copycat federal action. There could be instances when filing in federal court around the same time could entitle the court to consider which court is best. Here we have a substantially earlier filed case that is then refiled in federal court, and there's no reason to favor that court over this one.
Was the motion that was filed by the real parties in interest below, was the motion to stay it filed after the case was transferred here to the District of Nevada from New Jersey?
Check my... Let's see. The federal case was filed in the District of New Jersey on June 11th.
Right.
And then they stipulated to transfer on August 3rd, and the motion to stay was filed just a couple weeks later,
okay,
on August 20th.
Okay. No, it's my understanding that, so it was here in Nevada by then, but what had a lead plaintiff been identified by the time the motion was filed?
No, Your Honor, that took place later. So at the time of the stay, they were still deciding who the lead plaintiff would be. And so our case was ahead. We had decided the group of plaintiffs that would proceed. We were awaiting defendant's motion to dismiss. And so we were well ahead. We had started ahead and we had remained ahead at the time of the stay.
Is 2 months difference really substantial for first to file rule jurisprudence?
Justice Pickering, I think that it depends on the case. In some cases, say for instance, the federal court, the federal plaintiff, had taken those 2 months to really investigate the claims, and they had benefited the class, they had done research and honed the allegations. That's not what happened here. They just caught wind of our allegations 2 weeks later, copy-pasted it, and put it in federal court.
So you concede that the two complaints, the operative pleadings in each, are virtually identical, to use your opponent's phrasing?
They were, and they no longer are. Because now that they decided on lead plaintiff, those allegations have changed substantially. But at the time of the stay, the new lead plaintiff in the state court had...
So it's a cut and paste off your complaint, but now it's evolved, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Okay. Yes, with the new lead plaintiff. Correct.
I'm sure they would refute that. But
what's that?
They would dispute that, I'm fairly sure. But
okay. In addition, Your Honors, the Scion case says that the procedural requirements, the PSLRA financial stake requirement, which is so important to the trial court's decision, it holds that those procedural requirements do not apply in state court. And here...
Well, and also you have, I mean, there are procedural issues. People aren't arguing this, but it strikes me that you have an Iqbal Twombly standard in federal court. You don't have it in state court. You have different rules governing class certification in state court that you don't have in federal court. I think there's opportunism on both sides, but it's of concern to me when I look at this that what case wouldn't be stayed in deference to a federal court action in a 33 Act case under the district court's ruling? I don't know what case wouldn't be stayed.
Well, Your Honors, there's a standard set for how we can stay. First of all, there's no time limit. There's no deadline when to file a motion to stay. So we can wait for the case to develop. We can have them proceed in parallel. We have different parties right now. We can proceed for the time being and then decide if it's appropriate to stay one case or the other down the road.
So your vision is, what's your vision of what should have occurred here?
Should have allowed our plaintiffs to test our allegations on the merits. To have those allegations, to receive the motion to dismiss, for us to oppose it, and to move on to the next phase of the litigation.
Would you expect there to be a motion then in the federal court seeking to stay that case?
I would have expected that from the outset, Your Honors, because of the deference that courts give to the first filed case over the second filed case. I could expect it now. It's not too late to do that. In fact, there's, we have the Turf Paradise case that we cited in our briefing that says a federal court will defer to a state court when failure to do so would waste judicial resources. Also, there's the Mave Enterprise case, in which a state court case in California says, hey, we expect the defendants will try to stay the subsequent filed federal action. Your Honor, to move on, there are other bases for reversal in this case.
You know, can I ask you a question, though? I just keep going back to that spot that the district court has discretion to manage its own calendar. And it made specific findings here indicating this really is a federal act or a federal matter that's well-developed in federal court and better suited in federal court than the state court.
Justice Perry-Gray, the problem with that is that that same analysis applies in every single instance when we're talking about a state court versus a federal court.
That's right.
So if the standard is that we're going to favor a federal court for these 1933 Act cases, then the Supreme Court of the United States' unanimous decision in Cyan is meaningless.
That's just one factor to consider.
And the specific provision of the 33 Act that gives parallel jurisdiction, right?
The
33 Act itself,
right,
has language about
that's exactly
a
right
federal court.
And not only that, but it has language that the case then can't be removed to federal court. So that's saying the plaintiffs belong here in state court, and they can stay here in state court.
Was Cyan decided after the district court rendered its decision on the stay motion?
No, Your Honor. It was actually even before we filed our case. It was in March of 2018, and we filed our case in April of 2018. In addition to our choice of forum, the third reason that the court can reverse is the discounted prejudice. I mean, in the order, the lower court says there's no prejudice to plaintiffs in this case. Your Honor, that's just wrong. I mean, we've been stayed for an entire year now, and there's no end in sight. In addition,
but isn't the case in federal court proceeding?
It is, Your Honors, and it's proceeding with someone else in control other than my clients. And,
sure.
And it hasn't gone too well there.
Supported class, right?
Well, we don't know what the class is yet there because it hasn't been certified. But
when you say it hasn't gone too well there, what do you mean?
Well, as you saw a notice of recent authority filed by respondents in this case, the district court stripped almost all the allegations from that case. And rather than take some time to amend the pleading and try to correct those allegations, the plaintiffs in that case just decided to move forward without them and abandon them. So that's not something we would have done. So that just enhances our prejudice in this case.
You're into your rebuttal time, sir.
Oh, I'll save that then.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Joshua Hamilton of Latham & Watkins on behalf of the respondent Switch, Inc. and the individual defendants. Today, the counsel for the underwriter defendants is also here. They've joined our brief, but I'll be arguing on behalf of all the respondents. Your Honors, what I just heard was a walk back of primarily the appellant's position that there should be a categorical rule that no first filed case can ever be stayed. As Your Honors know, that would basically undermine decades of Supreme Court and Nevada Supreme Court precedent that holds and recognizes the court's discretion to manage its dockets and stay its case. In terms of the de novo review, there's no grounds for that. This matter is under Landis and Mayhew. This is solely a matter for the district court to determine whether or not a stay is appropriate. I do want to address a couple other positions that the plaintiffs have taken. There has been no case cited by appellants at all that strips a district court of its discretion to stay a first filed case. None of them.
Okay. Let's assume we have discretion. Go on and talk about the factors and the analysis.
Absolutely. So, Your Honor, contrary to what the plaintiffs have characterized, this was a very detailed order, case-specific order, that this court went through. The court didn't just apply the PSLRA. That was a factor. And what's interesting here is the plaintiffs are asking for a categorical rule saying, and as Your Honor noted, when would a case ever be stayed if the later filed federal case could always be, when could a federal case proceed if it was always stayed? Well, this case is a unique case. One, we have the issue of it's only 2 months apart. But what happened here in terms of the order, just to correct something, the case was, lead plaintiff had already been selected at the time that the district court entered its order staying the case. And what we have here that's different from other cases, and certainly something that the district court can consider, is we know some of the characteristics of this plaintiff that you don't normally get in state court. And that is because, not ascribing any blame or anything else, but the same law firm that's representing the plaintiffs that filed a stipulation with the district court to be the lead counsel in this case, subsequent to the filing of the federal case, filed an application in federal court to be the lead plaintiff, to represent a different lead plaintiff.
But they withdrew that.
Excuse me?
They withdrew that, did they not?
They did. That's what we know, which we normally wouldn't know because it's not required in state court, is they made a representation in that filing. The representation said, based on the knowledge of counsel, no plaintiff holds sufficient stake more than the one they represented.
Okay, but that's not the standard in state court to decide who the lead plaintiff is.
It's not. But the fact is the court can take a holistic view in determining whether or not it should stay a case, particularly in the context of a class action.
The concern I have is state courts have equal jurisdiction over 33 Act.
Correct.
Claims, and this is a pure 33 Act complaint in state court. I don't know what's happened in federal court beyond what you filed. The district court's analysis would produce a stay in every parallel state-federal case. I'm not hearing from you when it would not.
It would not when a plaintiff can demonstrate that it is the most qualified plaintiff. It would encourage not just a race to the courthouse, because under their standard, the only thing you need to do is get there first. There should be an ability for a qualified plaintiff to file a case in state court and not only be
But the district court didn't base its determination in this case on the plaintiff's lack of qualification.
It partly did. Part of the analysis, the whole
But not exclusively at all.
No, exactly. I mean, And that's our point, too. The court looked at a number of factors. The court looked at specifically at the overlapping of the claims. The court looked at judicial economy. The court looked at the duplication of effort that would incur. The court looked at its own.
Those would be true in every case.
That's true. Those are the factors that the court should consider.
So you boil it down to plaintiff qualification? I mean, that's the only thing that would produce a ruling of no stay versus a ruling of stay in that metric.
Well, I think what we're talking about is a case specific. There doesn't need to be a general rule established. Right. What there needs to be is that the district court has the discretion to analyze the facts before it. And here, the court was able to have those facts before it where it otherwise wouldn't. And I think what's also important, in our motion, we noted all these things. It wasn't like this was an ambush. We noted the fact that and the district court took into account the fact that we know that this plaintiff has less holdings. We know that the factors that Congress has said, well, certainly we acknowledge that it's not directly applicable. There's no PSLRA requirement for a lead plaintiff application in state court. The legislative history and the congressional policies that specifically say we know that a plaintiff with more financial stake is more equipped and more qualified to represent the putative class, and because of that...
Oh, but that would produce a stay in every case again. We're coming full circle because the greatest financial stake is PLSRA, but state court doesn't require that.
Well, here's why it wouldn't. Because what I'm saying is this case, because of the fact that we know the record reflects, while it's not required that the plaintiff makes a showing of financial stake in state court, what we know in this case is we know that it doesn't have the stake in the holdings that the federal court did because of the application that was filed in federal court. This case, as the plaintiff said, it's a case...
So let's assume they don't have as large a stake.
Right.
Okay, let's assume that's true. That's not the state court standard for deciding who may be a lead plaintiff here, and that's only a requirement that's under the PSLRA, which only applies in federal court, even though 33 Act cases can clearly be filed in state court. So what? Why does that matter?
Well, because one, as Your Honor pointed out, there is a federal case proceeding representing a putative class. And what the application will ultimately be an issue of class certification in state court, where the Nevada court does model its rules after Rule 23. And we'll have to make it a determination whether or not, whether a class action is the most optimal means to litigate the case. So we already know that will be one of the factors. So why put the district court through the determination? If the federal case gets certified, then you have a class action moving forward in federal court representing the same class, representing the same IPO against the same defendants.
But if it doesn't get certified and the complaint is significantly narrowed in federal court and not in state court, the plaintiff here is losing its ability to a timely judicial resolution of its claim in state court, which we can't fully discount. I mean, that's one of the factors that, regardless of the context, when you're staying litigation, you're depriving someone of the ability to go forward in that court, and that was their chosen court. I mean, that's we can't just discount that.
Well, I think there's a couple of principles we can think about. There is, whose interests are we looking out for? They could file the case on their own behalf. They could file an individual plaintiff's action in court and seek relief on their own. They keep talking about just our case, and the only difference is that they can't represent the class. There's nothing stopping them from doing that. No one's saying that if that was the case, these factors the court would look at would be completely different. And if you look at CAIFA, Farmland, all the California cases that we've talked about, those are all strategic litigations where somebody filed one case and then someone else came in to file another to gain advantage. Switch and the other defendants, we didn't ask to be sued in two different places. And the question of why didn't you stay the federal case? Well, because we already knew based on the record that the federal plaintiff had more shares than this person. And Congress has said, we look at the institutional investors, we look at who has the greatest financial stake as a critical component of who should represent the class. So why would we take the, if we know that it doesn't make sense, and they've acknowledged in oral argument, a case should be stayed. So which one should be stayed? And looking at it, why would we stay a case, why would we seek to stay the case, where they've already admitted there's a more qualified plaintiff proceeding on behalf of the class? And I think if you look at the case as what are we looking at for the case-specific factors that the court should determine in managing its docket, Judge Denton clearly looked at that. This is not an order that only says PSLRA governs. This is an order that went through specific factors of judicial economy and overlapping claims and found, ticked off all the boxes for all of those things, and then found there's nothing in the record that this plaintiff is more qualified. In fact, he knew otherwise. And that's why his discretion should be upheld, and the writ petition should be denied. If Your Honor, have any other questions?
You know, can you address Cyan and how you think it is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Analysis as to whether the party's rights are best determined in federal court?
Absolutely. So Cyan is limited solely to the issue of jurisdiction. Cyan does not discuss parallel litigation at all. But what's interesting about Cyan, if you read it, it does emphasize the constraints that the United States Supreme Court had in looking at the statutory language. It only was faced with the ruling of, is there jurisdiction, is there concurrent jurisdiction, and can we remove? And the court actually acknowledged Congress's intent was that all cases are filed in federal court, but it didn't say that. But what it said was, unfortunately, Congress's intent is not always 100% achieved by its statute. So the other 5% can be, if you look at this parallel litigation, this is not in does not contravene Siam, but is actually consistent with the congressional intent.
Some of the cases, and they're not dealt with in the briefs, but looking at the law on this, some courts elsewhere have expressed concern about the relative procedural advantages to being in state court versus federal court. The Iqbal Twombly issue, Nevada does not have that standard that the federal court has. We're under the old version. And other procedural differences between state and federal court is a reason that the state courts in a first filed but not
a long time. Like, it's not well underway. Neither action was well underway here. 2 months, I'm not convinced, is a substantial amount of time. But that those procedural advantages should be taken into the calculus and thought about and discussed. What's your comment on that?
Well, I think it's unclear in this specific context whether or not that would have made a difference. I think Nevada still does have a Rule 9b requirement.
Right, so it's a fraud pleading.
Right.
Yeah. So you're saying that's not a factor here? What if it was? I mean, what if it's not pure 9b? There may be other aspects of plausibility
I think that could be an aspect in terms of if it were argued in before the court. That could be an aspect the court considers in the holistic determination about whether or not in exercising its stay that's appropriate.
And what about differences in class certification and appealability of different orders and so on and so forth? Do you think it's appropriate for a state court to be considering that in this context?
I think we know that under the Nevada cases that models their rules and takes models after Rule 23.
So right, but they're a little bit different now.
Right. So, I mean, again, that's a factual determination. If that would apply in a particular case, perhaps that could be something the court could raise. I mean, it could be raised and the court could look at. But I think for the issues here, we know that this is a federal securities class action and what the particular requirements are going to be for certification. And one of the most important is the qualification of the lead plaintiff.
And since you have time, and I realize I'm asking you things that were quite briefed. Your colleague on the other side is saying, well, it shouldn't have, the categorical stay should not have been imposed at the get-go. We should have been allowed to proceed a ways. Now, how far, I don't know, but what's your answer to that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the issue also we have and that Congress identified is kind of as a rush to class certification and a rush to issues where by a more unqualified plaintiff with less at stake. So what would happen is essentially you'd have two cases proceeding to class certification as fast as, with them trying to get there as fast as possible, knowing it's going to block the other one. So where you have here, you know that there's a lead plaintiff that's been appointed. There's a procedure that's going on in federal court. There can be a determination that they'll be acting in the best interest. There's not a race to judgment or a race to certification. It could be a danger if you don't stay one of the cases.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just three quick points, Your Honor. First, as far as us walking back the general rule that we said in the papers, we're not walking it back. We're simply saying that even under defendant's standard, which requires a fact-intensive analysis, it still fails because it still should be reversed because we're talking about a standard that applies in every single instance, as counsel just admitted.
I don't think he did just admit that. I mean, I think what he's saying is these two cases were teed up at the same roughly the same time, 2 months apart. And the only thing that distinguishes your rights from the federal plaintiff's rights is you filed first, but neither case was well underway, so not much had been done.
And I guess I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because of the 2 month gap is substantial, and because the federal case just copied our allegations.
Okay.
Also, the second point I wanted to make was counsel's point about the financial stake requirement and how it could apply in state court. I don't understand that, Your Honors. There's no mechanism for us to even do that. This is a rebuttable presumption among lead plaintiff candidates in federal court. There's no way for us to participate in that. There's no mechanism in Nevada state court for us to submit these papers that he expects us to have submitted. And even aside from that, what the court did here was look at only the financial stake requirement. And in the Tezos case that we cite, it says it would make little sense to have the PSLRA financial stake requirement be sufficient on its own to justify a stay. Because what the court did here, it overlooked all these other factors that it should have considered. The stay standard, our right to choose a forum, the precedent favoring first filers. And then the third point, Your Honors, is this talking about the legislative intent, the United States legislative intent that they meant to, accordingly, they meant to include more. They meant to have that apply, have 1933 acts really be in federal court, but they didn't write it clear enough. That's not what Cyan found. What Cyan wrote was, we do not know why Congress declined to require as well that 1933 Act class actions be brought in federal court. Perhaps it was because of the long and unusually pronounced tradition of according authority to state courts over 1933 Act litigation. It goes on, even if Congress could and should have done more, it wrote the statute it wrote. Your Honor, we think reversal is appropriate in this action, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.